Okay, we are back talking with Richard Sauder. That's S-A-U-D-E-R, Ph.D., who has written a most remarkable book, Underground Bases and Tunnels, What is the Government Trying to Hide? And you can get that book by calling 1-800-905-8367. That story about the tunnels allegedly under L.A. and Southern California on the West Coast is up on my website now. Under the headline section, you'll find it there, as well as many other very, very hot breaking news stories of this very turbulent period of time we are in right now. Let's go to the phones now, Richard. We've got some callers waiting to talk to you. Let's go up to KRKO in Everett, Washington, and welcome Alan to the program. Hi, Alan. And Richard is on the air. What's your question?
I didn't really have a question. I had a couple of things to just tell you real quick. I worked on the metro rails down there, did a lot of the tunneling.
In L.A.?
Yeah. And the sewer under the Los Angeles airport, I think that was 18-foot diameter tunnel we did there. I think it was 8 miles in total, and set some records on that. I can tell you who did it if you want to know.
Yeah, that's interesting. The people listening right now, first of all, it's probably something that most people in L.A. didn't even know was going on.
Right.
First of all, who funded that? Was that a city, a county?
It was a city thing to get back up and running some of the sewers that were falling down, some of the smaller ones.
As Richard indicated earlier, that's a big retooling effort that cities have to go through.
Right. It went all the way from up in the back of the Fox Hills Mall there all the way down through under the Los Angeles airport and came out at the other end at that big station there. Anyway,
how is it constructed, Alan? Richard mentioned that there's usually a lot of large trucks or maybe narrow-gauge rail cars that pull the dirt out. How did you accomplish it?
It was a large tunnel machine, what they call a maul. It looks like a big, I guess you could say it was like a baked bean can with the end open, and you lay concrete segments in there and push off of them with these big rams, and it kind of drags the whole machine through there while caving in the ground in front of it as it goes, and an operator sits up front pulling the dirt out, the material out, into a train, and a train runs it out each time, and they advance 4 feet ahead at a time, and one crew could get up to 28 sets, so times 4 feet, and there's 3 shifts, and they work around the clock, just keeping it going.
Well, that's amazing.
So they
did you run across? Did you run across anything unusual during that underground expedition of yours?
Apart from a few cave-ins, nothing really weird. Some of the things under Los Angeles, like on the metro rail that we worked on there, under Hollywood Boulevard. Remember when that caved in?
Yep.
Yeah, that was us. There was a lot of small voids and things around the buildings. I don't know if they were old holes that people had dug down, but working alongside some of those larger buildings there, we ran into a few tiebacks, but nothing kind of outrageous. I was going to mention one other thing about the Point Magoo out by the naval station there.
Oh, yeah.
I used to live in Newbury Park, not too far from there, so I had a lot of friends that worked in that complex and around there. One of my friends was a computer technician, and he was sent out there to work on that Navy base. And interesting that he said sometimes they would go down as far as 7 floors down under the ground to work on some of the computers.
That's not a surprise, is it, Richard? Most of these bases nowadays have this kind of capability.
Yeah, a lot of major military installations have underground components, and 7 levels is not unheard of. The White House has 17 levels beneath it. I've heard of 24 levels between beneath an AT&T microwave facility in Missouri, and so there are a lot of industrial and communications and military facilities that have underground components.
Okay, now consider this. That's quite possible to do things like that, but when you're working around sea level in Point Magoo is pretty much I don't know how many feet above sea level is, but it's right there on the water.
Yes.
And a lot of sand and things there, so it must have been quite some job to get it down that far.
Yeah, the money, remember, money is no object here, though, when you're working with the black budget for the military
right.
and other agencies. And high-speed pumps and quick-setting concrete and that
right.
kind of thing can perform seeming miracles.
Yeah, there's one other thing. Talked to some surfers that surf right off of that bar out there.
Yes.
There's kind of a restricted zone there where they won't even let the surfers get out there on their boards. And apparently submarines can come in through there, and I don't know how true this is, but apparently there's a big, I don't know if you'd call it a ditch or what, out in the ocean there. And that could be another reason for things being so deep down in there.
Richard,
yeah,
that's something that we've heard before, that there may be some, either Long Beach or maybe Point Magoo, underground entrance, subterranean entrance for submarines. Do you have anything on that?
Yeah, you know, the Navy had something called the rock site concept that they developed back in the 1960s at the China Lake Naval Weapons Station. And the rock site concept actually spells it out in black and white, that there would be bases actually beneath the ocean floor, permanent manned facilities, and submarines would pull right up to these bases and dock and or go in through huge docks that would accommodate the entire submarine, be taken into these bases just like something in a James Bond movie. And then the crews could get out of the submarine and there would be quarters there, repair facilities, and so forth. And then when the submarine got ready to redeploy, it would exit the facility through yet another lock, a large lock to be sure. So this technology, the ability to make these kinds of facilities has been around for more than three decades. You have to understand the technology in the mining industry, in the petroleum industry, and the tunnel boring industry is quite large, sophisticated, and powerful, and has been for decades. And so, yes, the technology exists to make these facilities such that you could pull a submarine right in through a seeming hole in the bottom of the ocean floor and into a facility underground. That is well within the technological capability of modern-day industry.
Very interesting. I live maybe 35 minutes from Point Magoo, which has been obviously a top secret installation for years, and doesn't get a lot of notoriety. It seems like a sleepy place. You can drive right on past it, but there could be some really amazing things going on right there.
There is.
There is.
I lived right up the hill from there, backing onto Magoo State Park and in Newbury Park.
Sure.
And I have seen that triangular craft thing go over the sky because I'm into astronomy pretty big time. And I've seen it come out of the hills there, not so much from that direction of Point Magoo, but further up into the hills where those big satellite dishes are up there.
Right, sure.
I've seen that thing come across our houses and head out towards, east towards Nevada somewhere. And it's really something, and I'm sure a lot of other people have seen that thing go over.
Now, how far, Alan, were you from this object as it came up and went, a mile or two?
It came right over the park and headed kind of right towards the 101. But
so you had a heck of a good look at it.
Oh, yeah. Well, when this thing was coming towards me, it was just nothing but bright lights, and I thought it was just a plane or something really low. But you could hear the coyotes out there. You could hear frogs down at the creek a half a mile away because it's really quiet out there. And I heard no sounds from this thing. I could hear the frogs the other side of it. But I couldn't hear that craft. And when it came towards me, it looked like the lights were pointing towards, but it didn't have any flashing lights. And as it went over, the lights appeared to keep facing toward the houses or down. And as it went over, it was just nothing but bright lights kind of shining towards you. Maybe they were trying to make it so you couldn't see it. But you could see, how clear the stars are. You could see no stars around the object, and you could make out the triangular shape. And and I was so stunned that I wanted to run inside and get my wife and have her see it, but you're kind of paralyzed because by the time you get in there and get the people out, it may be gone anyway. So you just watch it go over, and it doesn't really fly. It floats. It's really something.
Amazing. All right, hang on, Alan. We'll be right back and ask Richard about this question I've wanted to ask Richard Sauter actually for about 2 years now about these underground bases that may accommodate such huge craft. Be right back. A fascinating program for you to think about tonight here at Sightings on the Radio. And welcome back indeed. Talking with Alan up in Everett, Washington, listening to us on KRKO. My guest, Richard Sauter, PhD, author of Underground Bases and Tunnels, What is the Government Trying to Hide? And the more we hear, it becomes pretty obvious the government is trying to hide a whole lot. The phone number for Richard's book, 800-905-8367. 800, toll free, 905-8367. Alan is telling us when he lived in the Newbury Park area, he had an awesome opportunity to see a large triangular craft. Two questions, Alan. One, did it appear to you, was it your instinct that this was a human-built and operated vehicle?
I don't know, Jeff. I grew up in New Zealand, and in the early 80s, I saw a lot of weird craft down there, obviously not anything that would have been military. Mm-hmm. And this this looked a little more like it was maybe built by us. I'm not sure. It's just
okay.
But I can't understand how it could be so big and so quiet.
Right, understand that. Question number two for you, and then I'm going to go right over to Richard for his answer and input. Did this thing appear to come out of the hills, so to speak?
Where I lived, there was a steep hill, and it kind of dropped off on the other side, and it just appeared to be flying over that
mm-hmm.
area. I didn't see it come out of any hills, although up in there, isn't that area called the Land of Mu or something? Don't they have something there? They say an ancient civilization lived up in there. In those
I hadn't
mountains.
Heard that, but it's an interesting, it used to be a land bridge to the Channel Islands that was part of the island grouping of mountains.
Apparently that whole area is an old dead volcano up in the back of Newbury Park there.
No, I've heard that before. Richard. Yeah, it could be. I don't know. It could be open. Or who knows? My question to you, Richard, is the talk, and you've heard it, about these huge triangular craft flying over populated areas, very slow, no noise. If they are human-built and operated, either reverse-engineered or through our own industrious creativity, constructed and flown by folks, where do they store these things?
You got me. I don't know. And I, but people certainly seem to be seeing them. I don't know that the propulsion need be as exotic as people think. Remember that you could have a dirigible that could be in a triangular shape just as well as a blimp-like shape.
Mm-hmm.
And you could, with very small motors and a helium-filled or a hydrogen-filled craft, at one and the same time have a very large craft that would be very silent. It's interesting to me that many of these triangular craft are seen at low altitude, but moving comparatively slowly in many cases. Sometimes they're described as moving at a walking pace, virtually, which would be consistent with a lighter-than-aircraft that need not have an exotic propulsion mode. And why would such a craft be made and flown over populated areas?
You'd think if it was military R&D or certainly maybe even deployed military, they wouldn't fly it over obviously populated areas. They'd
unless
keep well
they were,
away from
unless
them.
There were a disinformation campaign that
sure.
was being carried out.
But
there also may be, disinformation that is designed to muddy the waters. There may be triangular craft of more than one origin.
Easily done. And that's the inside smart money, that there are more than one point of origin for these things.
And there could be multiple modes of propulsion. Sometimes you could be seeing something made by Lockheed Martin. Sometimes you could be seeing something made by someone or something else. And I don't pretend to know. Now, you were getting around to, I think indirectly, how large underground installations could be.
Mm-hmm.
As to whether they could be large enough to conceivably accommodate some of these large craft, which are hundreds of feet in length. And the answer is, in principle, yes. Whether in practice they do or not, I don't know. But if the rock is competent, there's nothing to keep an engineering firm or a mining firm from making an opening deep underground, hundreds of feet underground, that could be 1,000 or feet more in length, 100 or 200 feet tall, 150, 200, 200 feet wide. You can make stupendously huge openings in the rock deep underground. Mind-boggling.
The idea of these triangular craft being human-engineered certainly makes sense, and yet we have reports of people who see them in daylight accelerate at almost warp speed out of sight. So that gives rise to the thesis that these are of multiple origins, and I agree. Alan, does this make sense to you, that we could build something of a size that Richard is laying out? And I'm asking you that as a professional. Would you see that being an award maybe given to your company to build something on the QT that big?
Yeah, I no longer work for that company. That company also has worked on a lot of military things. It's easy enough to do. Underground in certain areas with the right kind of rock, you can build some very large things. In Australia, my best friend works in a gold mine in Western Australia, and they take 100-ton dump trucks and drive them down into the ground, down through these spiral tunnels, and they have these huge loaders under there. The places are just huge. They're like football fields under there. They're gigantic, and it's all freestanding. They use a lot of rock bolts to hold the roof up, but it's just, you can't even imagine what it's like.
100-ton dump trucks driving down a spiral tunnel.
Oh, yeah.
What a vision. Oh.
Yeah, almost a mile underground to haul out the ore. They're just, and this is just a regular gold mine. So,
who was it that said, Richard, that this world is stranger than we could ever imagine? I forget. It's a great quote, though, and it seems
you,
like...
Jeff. You just said that.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I'll write that down.
Hey, one other thing. Yeah. A friend of mine, I won't mention his last name, Richard, an older gentleman, worked with me underground there, and... At the time, I thought, wow, you know, this is kind of interesting, building subways under Los Angeles, although it seems like a waste of money. He shook his head, and he said that's nothing compared to the work that he had done over in Nevada, and referring to Area 51. And I quizzed him on it. He didn't want to talk too much about it, but I asked him how big it is under there and what all they have there, and he just shook his head and he said, you wouldn't believe the miles of tunnels that they drove over there and the underground structures that they put in.
And where is this?
In Nevada, probably Area 51 up in Groom Lake area.
Yeah, you weren't pinning it down. I was just wondering, it was in Nevada. This is interesting. My last question to you was going to be, do you hear rumors? And I want to also point out that Richard Sauter is a real scholar in this business. He does not pander to rumor mongering. He won't put it on the air or in his book unless he's absolutely convinced it's substantive. And goodness knows the stories he must hear.
Right.
So there are people out there who are working on these things, lots of them. Are they sworn to secrecy, Alan? Do you know? Or are they threatened to secrecy?
You know, When I asked him if he could tell me more about it, he just told me the basics. He couldn't go into any kind of details. I said, "Well, what, aren't you allowed to talk about it?" And he said, "Let's just leave it there." And he's an older guy, pretty distinguished kind of a guy. Worked all his life in tunnels and just didn't want to talk about it. I don't know. I don't think. Perhaps he was threatened. I mean, who's going to come and catch him now?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Very interesting.
I don't know. I really don't know. But he didn't want to talk about it. And he just said, you just don't understand. You wouldn't believe it. You know, it's just amazing.
And you are a man who is a professional and work in that business, and he's telling you that.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Alan. We really appreciate the call.
You have the greatest show on the radio.
Well, thank you very much, Alan. I got the greatest listeners, I'll tell you that much.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Okay. Be right back. And we're talking with Richard Sauter here, and about 3 minutes from now, we'll continue. All right, let's jump all the way across country now to Jacksonville and welcome Doris to the program, listening on WJGR. Hi, Doris. What's your question for Richard Sauter?
Well, I have a few of them and a statement. Isn't one of the purposes of HARP to search out tunnels?
Yes, it is.
Another question is, how is gravity and air pressure, or the lack of air pressure, how does that affect the body while they're down there?
Okay. Doris likes to ask all her questions and hang up and listen, Richard. So
well I'm going to hold on this time make sure I'm not misunderstood, okay?
All right, let's take them one at a time then, if we may. First question about HARP, and is HARP designed to be able to do that? And the answer, as Richard said, is yes.
Yeah, one of the announced purposes of HARP is to carry out tomography, which is a fancy way of saying that it will be used to X-ray the upper crust of the northern hemisphere of the Earth, looking for underground tunnels and cavities. That's true.
Well, do you think that they're really trying to go ahead of the tunnel to make sure they can put the tunnel there without interference?
Well, they don't need HARP for that.
Well, they're both government projects, right? HARP and these tunnels. So it sounds like they would be conflicts of interest if they're looking for tunnels when they know that they're the ones put them there.
Well, but see, you got to remember, and you bring up an interesting question. We often speak of the government as if it were monolithic.
You're talking about a shadow government.
The shadow government
put the tunnels in?
Pardon me. But there are factions within the government, meaning the federal government. There is, even within the Pentagon, different agencies and departments. Why assume that the Department of the Army tells the Department of the Navy everything that it does, and that either of them tell the Department of the Air Force everything that they do, and vice versa? The left hand does not always know what the right hand is doing.
Right. That's probably one of our biggest problems, too.
And I believe the Navy and the Army are involved in HARP. I'm not sure if the Air Force is. It's two of the services that are involved, and the other one is not. They may be looking to see what their sister service has done that they may not know about, or they may be searching for things that perhaps private industry may be doing without telling them about.
Yeah, why do I have this funny vision of two top-secret, ultra-secret underground tunnel operations crossing paths down there?
I'm sure stranger things have happened. That could be. Who knows?
Okay, Doris, your question about gravity and air pressure underground.
Right. What effect would that have on the people that work, build the tunnels, plus the people that will supposedly be living there?
Well, I'm not an expert in this area, but I do know that in mines you can go quite deep, and some of the deepest mines in this country go down more than a mile, for example. In South Africa, I think there are gold mines that go down 10,000 feet or more.
Well, I've seen old movies. Didn't they have to have oxygen when they get down a certain level?
I think it's because of the heat. It gets very hot when you get deep underground.
Okay, so we've got a problem there.
Yes, exactly. I mentioned this earlier. Once you go about 4,000 feet down, just because of the pressure the rock is under, the temperature will be about 95 degrees. And you need to get rid of that heat somehow. What they do, and what I've seen in the literature, is to construct what are called chiller plants, where you actually cool the rock down. They put what are called heat sinks underground. They're something like artificially constructed ice cubes. I have one report from the Army Corps of Engineers that called for making multiple chambers, cylindrical vertical chambers in the rock, 4,000 feet underground. That would be 250 feet on the vertical dimension from top to bottom and 50 feet in diameter so that... you would then fill those with water and freeze them solid, so you would have these mammoth ice cubes that would be used for the purpose of keeping the installation cool. So there's a technological means of getting around that problem.
Well, it sounds like we have the same people building the tunnels that built the pyramids, doesn't it?
No, they're not the same people.
No.
I mean, it's so complicated.
Well, it is complicated, and it's expensive, and it's very highly secretive. And one of the things that bothers me... about this is one, the secrecy. We really don't know what's going on in many of these underground installations, and I think that we're entitled to know, one, that they exist, and two, what is happening in them. But beyond that, the United States Constitution is very clear. Let me read a clause for you. The U.S. Constitution says, no money shall be drawn from the Treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law, and a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. Well, in the case of these secret underground installations and the money that's being expended to construct and maintain them, the Constitution is being flouted. It's not being observed. It's not being followed. And what this amounts to saying is that we have a parallel shadow government, a secret government, and an unconstitutional government that's out of control.
Well, I think it's brazen about it, because it also says you have to declare war, but how many have we had that were not declared?
I can't remember one that was until after the fact.
Also, I wanted to know if they have to wear special clothing or breathing equipment, and how can you identify their air shafts? They have to be up high to avoid these mudslides. I mean, that could plug up their air shafts in a flash. And these floods we've been having, surely that would get into some of these air shafts if they're not extremely high. And this comment that I wanted to make, if we become victims of the world politicians' madness, and are left to suffer above ground while the politicians are safe underground, we should put shovels of radioactive material down their air shafts, or if it's chemical and biological, we can put the infected, contaminated carcasses in their air shaft. In other words, if we go, they go with us.
Yeah, well, the thing you have to understand about those air shafts is that they have very complex and efficient filters on them designed to filter out biological organisms, chemical toxins, and radioactive contamination. So none of that stuff would make it through. As for using special breathing apparatus when they're in the facility, to my knowledge, they don't have to do that. The facilities are designed to be habitable in a shirt-sleeve environment. And great care and money is lavished on them so that they are very comfortable, all things considered, to inhabit, to work in, to live in. Now, will people go in them in the event of catastrophe topside? Well, you can bet your bottom dollar on that. And many of these facilities have people in them as we speak.
I'm hearing from Doris if not angry, right on the doorstep of anger about all this shadow government that is so factionalized and fragmented in various power centers, which has unlimited money to do whatever it wants. It apparently is above all laws, knows no national boundaries, nor does it answer to any authority except its own arrogance and greed. I think Doris
well,
has said
right
something.
This time, for sure, Jeff.
Well, I think Doris is saying something a lot of people are sensing, and It's almost palpable. You can almost feel it, Richard.
Yeah, well, I'm not too happy about it myself. I guess that's why I do these kinds of shows and have written a book of the sort that I have. I'm very concerned about the arrogance of power. There's nothing wrong with power, but power ought to be employed productively and in a positive way if it's going to benefit the individual and society. And that's a truism, but it's not happening in this case. We have a decision to make as a society whether we're going to continue to put up with this kind of behavior by the elites, so-called elites.
Yep, indeed.
Okay.
All right, hang on. We'll be right back.
Okay,
thanks,
bye-bye.
Doris. Thanks very much. Be right back in about 3 minutes. All right, let's head up to Portland now and welcome Scott to the program, listening on KOTK. Hi, Scott. Thanks very much for your patience. You must have a sore ear by
now.
Yeah,
your last caller, I think, just was a great lead-in for what I had to say, because When I was in New Zealand, I dated a woman whose former fiancé was a Belgium geologist and mining engineer who had worked for about 12 years in Switzerland, helping to develop the rather extensive maze of tunnels and chambers and all kinds of facilities underground that they had for not just the military alone, but also or for the civilian government, but for the civilians themselves. It seems like every town has their own civil defense underground shelters and chambers and everything else that they have for their own survival, as well as stockpiles of food and mm-hmm. medical equipment, surgical facilities, dormitory facilities to accommodate not only the people of that town, but people who just happen to be caught during an emergency in that locale, things of that sort.
Well, supposedly all of Switzerland can be provided for by their government underground.
Exactly. And in fact, on 60 Minutes, I believe about 2 years ago, the Swiss government opened up one of their towns as an example. I think it was like about a 500 population town, and beneath the town were complete facilities, including state-of-the-art surgical laboratories and medical facilities. They had stockpiles of mm-hmm. medicines of every kind you can imagine. They had the dormitory facilities to accommodate everyone, the commissaries, the full kitchens, so that they could actually produce wholesome food, not just prepackaged or freeze-dried or mm-hmm. canned-type mm-hmm. food like you could expect, right. You know, in civil defense kind of measures here. I mean, their government is truly concerned about the survival of their people, whereas here you have the military and the elite and a few corporations taking care of their top CEOs, and that's just about the extent of it in this country, as I see it. They're ready to sacrifice the rest of us, you know, in time of some catastrophe such as this this possible coronal flare up of the sun, which right. could well occur spring of next year and destroy 90% of human life on this planet. Apparently, the elite are willing to mull underground and leave the rest of us to God, you know.
Well, aside from FEMA, we have no active civil defense program in this country, and a lot of people, of course, suspect that FEMA is far more than an agency designed to help in times of national emergency. What about this underground survival ethic that many other countries seem to have, Richard, and how does that really play into the idea of underground tunnels and bases?
Yeah, the caller is quite correct about the civil defense program in Switzerland. There's nothing like that here. In the United States, the secret underground installations are not designed for the use of the citizenry, even though many of them, from what we know, from what's available in the public record, have been constructed under the ostensible rubric of national security. If push came to shove, there's really no pretense that the nation at large would be offered shelter in them. If by the nation you understand it to me, if by nation you understand the people that comprise the country, the people of the United States would not be provided for in these facilities. The elite would scramble underground to save their rear ends and leave us topside to fend for us as best we could. If it were, for example, a real shooting nuclear war, the majority of us would be nuclear missile fodder, and that's the plain truth of it. The leadership, so-called, of this country, the Democrats and the Republicans at the highest levels, the military command, the captains of industry, really don't care much for us at all, except as they can use us and exploit us for their own narrow purposes and personal gain.
Well, you know what bothers me, Richard, is we're facing the very real possibility as a result of our going back in and bombing Iraq, that Iraq may just well launch terrorist attacks of anthrax on our major cities, some kind of very cheap, simple, concerted attack where they would send in teams which would fly over each of the major cities of this country, perhaps at 3 o'clock in the morning, and spray anthrax over the major population centers and end up wiping out a big percentage, 60-70% of our population, and leave the rest of us suffering, you know, with total breakdown of all of our medical facilities, communication, sanitation, everything else, food supplies, the whole bit. defend for ourselves. And here we have these secret facilities that, of course, the military and the civilian leadership would all take to shut the doors and shoot anyone who came within range, including our own people, to prevent us from being able to get access to that. How can we at this time prevail and pressure our political leadership in Washington to open these facilities up, especially those closest to the major population centers, so that in time of such a hideous terrorist attack, or in, like I say, a natural catastrophe such as the possibility of a coronal flare-up next spring, that we could all, at least the big percentage of us, would have a chance of surviving underground for a given period of time.
All right, Scott, we got to get ready for a break here. Thank you. You've stated some concerns.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. That are held by many, many people. I think pretty obviously the facilities simply do not exist to provide for even a fraction of the population in this country. We'll be back to talk to Richard Sauter in a couple minutes and pursue that line of thought as we continue tonight. Once again, the phone number for Richard's brilliant book is 800-905-8367. 800-905-8367. Be right back. All right, our remaining few minutes with Richard Sauter here. I was thinking back on what we used to call, I remember seeing films of this in the 60s, civil defense in this country. And it's gone the way of the dinosaurs. They used to tell kids, remember to get under the desks and curl up into a wrap. What was it? Put your legs up? I don't remember. Anyway, in times of a nuclear blast, you were supposed to assume the position. And then they had the civil defense facilities in the basements of buildings with old moldy crackers, I remember them talking about. There is no more civil defense in this country, is there?
Not that I hear of. And I'm not even concerned about it, to tell the truth. I think that the best defense we could have is to stop being offensive. If we bomb the hell out of Iraq in the next week or so, that is only going to enrage another generation of impoverished Iraqis. What are we accomplishing? The past bombing campaign in 1991, was it, or 1990, has so destroyed the country that in the interim, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi children have died for want of medicine and food and pure water.
Imagine the level of rage in that country.
Well, entire families were destroyed. If
one
your
and
wife
a half
were
million?
Incinerated, for example, yeah. Or your children were incinerated by the napalm and the fuel air explosives that were dropped all over the country. What are we accomplishing? I'm not sure. Are we going to bounce the rubble one more time? We're talking about a poverty-stricken third-world country here. I'm not sure of the military objective. I have read the propaganda that's in the newspapers. But whether
you got that word right.
Pardon me?
Yeah, you have that word exactly right. Propaganda.
Yes, but is that justification for absolutely humbling and sending practically back to the Stone Age and already poverty-stricken country? Sure, Saddam Hussein is a dictator. Many countries have dictators. There are countries in this world that have dictators that the United States and the CIA installed in power.
And he was the golden boy of the CIA. Remember that in the 80s while he was fighting Iran. This is a crazy, crazy scenario we're dealing with. Nothing is as it seems. When you read stories, I've got them on the website of the Americans having given Saddam Hussein basically all of his chemical and biological weapons technology in the 80s. The British, as late as 92, now having been found out to be selling items to them. Now the Russians, 94,
that's right.
95.
These underground bunkers that Saddam Hussein has that we are told must be destroyed because they threaten the security of this nation were right. Built for Saddam Hussein by the Germans and the English during the 1980s. Many of the biological weapons he bought in the United States through his agents in the 1980s from companies that were given export licenses by the United States Commerce Department and State Department.